In the 2 years since the Father Reynolds Mission to Pray debacle, which cost the station a great deal in terms of public confidence as well as money, neither of which it could afford to squander, RTE has seen a major overhaul of its news and current affairs division, particularly in the area of investigative journalism. Primetime Investigates was dropped and a new strand of investigative programmes was launched last month. Now, among the changes in the aftermath of both the Reynolds affair and the Tweetgate episode and the external reports into them was the appointment of a new head of news, ex-BBC man Kevin Backhurst. Kevin, those issues which I have mentioned exposed serious system failures in RTE. You've been in the job almost 8 months now. What's been the progress so far in addressing those failures and implementing the recommendations in those reports?
Well, I hope we've made pretty substantial progress, and to be fair to the people who were there before I arrived, you know, there was already a lot of work going on to address some of those failures. You know, I think the first thing was that RTE needed to face up to how serious some of the mistakes were and what the consequences were, and as you outlined, RTE certainly paid the price for those serious mistakes. You know, a lot of work had been done before I arrived, and there's been a lot done since I came in terms of, first of all, my very presence here is part of it. There are a number of new people in news and current affairs in the management positions. There's a number of new guidelines we brought in. We enforce them very rigorously. And there's a number of new procedures in terms of, particularly in terms of investigative journalism.
So, Kevin, a year on then, and almost a year for you into the job, do you think public trust is on the way to being restored?
Well, I hope so, yes. I mean, you know, it's inevitable when you have a high-profile mistake or two high-profile mistakes like the ones we had, there will be a dent in public trust, and that's right and that's to be expected. There was a dent, but even then, RTE's levels of trust remained at a very high level, and I think that is a result of years of building public trust in what we do and in our reporting and so on. And interestingly, levels of public trust and support in RTE are back up to the levels seen before the problems on Primetime Investigates and the presidential debate. But, you know, I've no doubt, and I think everyone who works, you know, in RTE News and Current Affairs has absolutely no doubt, trust is a hard and valuable treasure to have. And, you know, we go in every day knowing that you start again every day earning the trust of the audience, and you can only earn that by doing top-quality journalism and hard-hitting journalism and connecting with your audience and hopefully giving them the type of journalism they would expect and that they pay for.
And the Primetime brand would have built up a lot of trust over the years. You clearly didn't feel it was fatally dented by the Reynolds affair and the Tweetgate affair, particularly because you stuck with the brand.
I feel that over the years, Primetime has got a very proud history of very good journalism and certainly has earned trust over the years. Did make one serious mistake, but I felt it was better consolidated around a well-known brand that still wins big audiences three nights a week on RTE and has a reputation over the years for doing some very good journalism. So that was what we decided to do, and I think that's paid off. And I felt it was the right thing to concentrate our current affairs journalism, and you know, this was working with Dave Nally as the new head of current affairs, to concentrate our journalism in a world of where we've got fewer resources and so on, under a single brand. I'm very lucky there is a huge appetite in the Irish audience for current affairs. I mean, to have three really good slots a week for current affairs is very unusual, actually. So to consolidate under one brand and bring the very best talent on board, so, you know, with Miriam and Pat and Claire Byrne joining the team, and George Lee as well, you know, so bringing some of the biggest and best current affairs journalists we have under the single banner and working with them together. And, you know, by doing that and also by having a bespoke studio that we can use in a flexible way, it means that we can do a slightly different programme each night of the week. So one night of the week, generally, you'll get an audience discussion and interview guests and so on. But it doesn't have to be like that. We could use that. If we have a one-hour investigation we want to put into that evening, we can put it into that slot. You know, similarly, if there's another evening when we weren't planning on having a big audience, we can have a smaller audience to discuss a particular issue where you can get people with first-hand knowledge of the story into the studio and so on. So, you know, it is a little bit about giving us, getting maximum impact for the team, the title, the journalism, and it's a bit about having maximum flexibility about the type of current affairs journalism you can do within the slot, if you like.
Are you satisfied that that's meeting the audience needs?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the ratings seem good and strong, and that's in a new and extremely kind of competitive world for ratings. And the team have been delivering some great journalism so far, some tough, robust interviews, some very good discussions of the big topics of our age. And, you know, we've started with the investigations rolling out, and, you know, there are three more of those to come in the next few weeks. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing those on air when they're ready to go.
Was there any trepidation about venturing back into the investigative arena after?
Not from me. No, I think there was appetite and desire to get back in and show that we're still doing it and we can do it properly and we'll hold people to account.
And how are your three presenters working together? Because I know that there have been some stories about wardrobe changes and so on that you may have could have done without.
Yeah, well, the story was silly about that. It wasn't really true either. It was true that they had the same colour dress on, apparently, if you want to deal in trivia, but Miriam was very happy to change, so that part of the story wasn't true. They're working very well together. They're actually a pleasure to work with, and they all have their own real strengths. And, you know, I've seen the various combinations and I've seen them single-headed as well now. And I just think they bring a really top-class interviewing and top-class reporting, handling of the audiences and so on. I'm really pleased the way they're working together. And, you know, all three of them are a pleasure to work with and I think the team are enjoying it.
Now, I know you launched your new investigative strand a few weeks ago. Would it be fair to say that investigative journalism in RTE is operating under new restraints post-Reynolds?
I wouldn't say new restraints. There are definitely, it's operating within new guidelines. And that's partly to try and ensure we don't make any of the same sort of mistakes we made before. And the key thing is to find the balance where you have those guidelines to try and avoid any mistake that is humanly possible to avoid, but where you still enable RTE to do proper and profound investigative journalism, because it's a really important part of what we do and it's an important part of Irish journalism.
Now, one of the things that investigative reporters rely on is editorial support and editorial leadership. I know it was before your time, but can reporters rely on that leadership in future?
Well, I hope so. You know, there were various sanctions. A lot of people were personally affected by it and there were other consequences. Yes, absolutely. People can rely on my support. You know, I will support them fully so long as they stick to the job, stick to the guidelines, and I absolutely will support journalists who are doing their job and doing the journalism. There is another side to that deal, and that is that they do the job in a proper way and according to the guidelines now, which are very clear to them.
But if I put that question to your predecessor 2 years ago, I would have got the same answer. Yes, the supports are there. Of course, the editorial direction is there. No, there'd never be a question of an investigative reporter being the one to deal with a libel lawyer. You know, have there been practical changes actually affected?
Yeah, there have been a wide range of new initiatives and there are new guidelines. There are, if you like, one or two new hurdles we have to jump over to get programmes on air, which in my view are the right ones to have there. They won't stop programmes getting to air, but they make you re-examine things maybe once or twice, whereas in the past that wouldn't have happened. And one of the key things we have done is, in the revamp of primetime 3 nights a week, is to allow the time to get investigations on air when they're ready to go on air, not have a false timetable, which is the timetable of the schedule, saying you have to get this programme on this Thursday night or this Tuesday night or whatever. For example, the first big investigation I think we've had since I arrived was the charities investigation a few weeks ago, which was a very good piece of work by Paul Maguire. And that programme, it was nearly ready to go the week before, but Dave Nally, the head of current affairs, and myself and Paul Maguire recognised there were a few extra things we wanted to do, extra checks. We wanted to give the individuals involved the right amount of time to come back if they wanted to do an interview, which they didn't. And therefore, we held it for a week. And you know, it made sure, in my view, that we had, you know, as far as is humanly possible, we had all the T's crossed and the I's dotted.
Now, since you took over, there have been some criticisms of RTE's handling of certain news stories. For instance, the coverage of the late night sitting for the promissory note deal, the coverage of Adrian Donoghue's murder, the Detective Garda, the amount of people and the cost of the papal election coverage. How would you assess your own performance so far?
Look, I always question my own performance. I think that's a good thing to do. And I don't so much think so on Adrian Donoghue, where I didn't really see any questioning about her coverage on that. I mean, yes, there were some on the prom note night and there were some questions asked about the number of people we sent to Rome for the Pope and the amount of money we spent on it. Of course, I'll always go back and question what we've done and think, have we done the right things and are the lessons we learn? I think you should do that. I hope I'm doing a decent job. You know, I think RT News and Current Affairs is overall performing very well. I think, you know, on those particular stories, as I said publicly on the Pope story, I think it was a really important story globally. It was a very important story for many people here in Ireland. And to provide world-class coverage on major news stories is something we should be aspiring to do. And it's not a cheap thing to do. We examined the number of people we sent on that, what their roles were. I know for a fact they all worked extremely hard. They did a lot of coverage across many outlets and many platforms, and when I compared the cost with the cost of the previous change of Pope, I'm pleased to say we made substantial savings on that, both in terms of numbers and the amount of money we spent on it. So I've gone back, I've looked at it, I've examined it, I've looked at the coverage, which I was very proud of. You know, I think on that one, I suspect we will aspire, we're ambitious in how we cover the big stories. So when there are other big stories like that, we'll still have to make similar sort of decisions according to how much money we have. On the Promenade night, again, I've gone back and looked at it. I mean, it was a tricky one all evening that evening. The event was due to be between 6 and 7, then it was completely off, then it was back on, but there was no timing, then it drifted. We did actually a lot of coverage. There was extensive coverage on the 6-1 and the 9 o'clock news. There was then an extended late debate on RT Radio. There was extensive web coverage and coverage on News Now. And then when the actual announcement did happen, near to midnight, we took it live on RT1. So, you know, I think we can overstate possibly that we didn't do enough coverage on it. There was a huge amount. And the next day there was a massive amount of coverage when we actually had the story, rather than sitting not knowing if the story was going to happen or not. You know, I think when you judge it in hindsight, if I'd known it was definitely going to happen at 20 to midnight, I might have done things differently. But we were dealing with a moving target, so, and we didn't have a programme scheduled to go on air. And I think the thing is, if you take a decision to put a programme on air, not knowing if the story is going to happen or not, you know, you're making a statement of a different kind. And I'm still not sure that would have been the right thing to put a prime time on when we weren't even clear whether the story was actually going to happen that evening or not.
At this time last year, the then acting head of news, Killeen Dupuir, was in defending the closure of the London office, which, of course, Brian O'Connell subsequently denounced and called Ryanair journalism and said was a betrayal of RTE's public service objectives. Given the intensity of the debate over the UK's possible withdrawal from the EU, major trading partner, would you say that was the right decision? Would you consider rescinding it, closing the UK office in circumstances where you still have a Washington bureau?
Well, I think it was definitely the right decision at the time. I've spoken to Killeen about it and I've spoken to Noel Curran about it. The London bureau was based in a very expensive premises in Millbank, which cost us a huge amount of money. And, you know, was it producing the amount of coverage that the money warranted at the time? I'm not sure it was, to be honest. I think at the time it was probably the right decision. I think, you know, it's the Director General has said publicly, and he and I have agreed on this, it's a decision that we're constantly keeping under review because it is an important story for our audience here. There's a lot of Irish people in the UK, apart from anything else, and then we've got potentially the British general election followed by potentially a British vote on whether to leave the EU or not coming up, potentially a vote on Scottish independence. You're right, there's a lot of good stories come out there. So, you know, I think we'll keep it under review. We'll have to weigh that up with the financial constraints we're operating under right now. And it is something we may well revisit. But if we do revisit it, we won't spend a lot of money on expensive premises. We'll do it a different way.
Well, that was the point I think Brian O'Connell was making, that a reporter basically with a laptop and a smartphone could cover London now.
Potentially. I think that's right. I think Brian's right in that aspect of it. That is one way of doing it, yeah.
Now, what was the rationale, can you tell me, behind the launch of a 9 a.m. news and current affairs programme? Because it kind of falls between the two stools of, I suppose, you know, breakfast television and breakfast news. It doesn't satisfy either fully, I would have thought.
Well, the rationale was, first of all, I started from the premise we've got a very successful radio programme, news programme, The Morning Ireland, which is also on News Now. If people want to see it on television, it's televised. We didn't then have any kind of TV news presence, if you like, through until the lunchtime news. So there was a definite gap there. There was also a question about, you know, what resources we had available to do it. And, you know, I mean, obviously one of the things we considered briefly was putting a breakfast programme on. But if you put a breakfast programme on, you have to have an overnight team. You have to man the studio much earlier in the morning. The costs ratcheted up very, very quickly. And I'm still not convinced there's a huge appetite necessary in Ireland to have that from RTE, because Morning Ireland is such a successful programme, whereas we did have a gap after that. And by starting Morning Edition at 9 o'clock, it means actually we could stretch the use of the studio, the new studio, across the day. So resource-wise, it's actually been relatively good value to deliver much, much cheaper than it would be to do a breakfast programme that starts at 7 in the morning. So that was part of the rationale. You know, I'm very pleased it's been very well received. You know, I think we are offering something very different to TV3. That was the intention. We don't want to duplicate what they're doing. And, you know, I think it's good to have a news presence early in the morning. And frankly, one of the other things is a longer term aspiration of RTE is to build the News Now TV channel. And to have this as a 2-hour live block in the morning significantly increases the amount of live coverage we have on the channel across the day. And it's a good starting point for that.
And what's your research telling you about your audience? Who was watching at that time of the morning?
Obviously, we had an idea about who the potential audience might be. I'm kind of surprised about who it's been a particular kind of hit with, in a way, because we've deliberately set out to make it a different kind of programme, different types of guests, particularly, you know, it's been very deliberate to try and make sure we've got a much better representation of women than you see in some other places, and as guests and so on. And I thought the trade for that, maybe we get a good female audience in the morning. Now, we do get a good female audience in the morning, but we also, there's been a big spike in men over the age of 55, which I was quite surprised in.
Now, you're not even a year in the job, as I said, but, I mean, what are your ambitions for the RTE News Service going forward, considering the fact, I suppose, that a lot of people increasingly access their news online? There's no longer an appointment to view the news bulletins, for instance. What shape do you see the service that you'll be offering taking over the next 5 years?
Well, yeah, you're not strictly right about that. I mean, the news bulletins on RT1 still are appointment to view. You know, the 9 o'clock news regularly gets over 500,000 viewers, and the 6-1 does very regularly gets 40% share of the audience. The challenge, I think, of the job is to make sure the quality of those bulletins, which still provides us with a very sizable part of our audience, still very important to a lot of people, the quality of those bulletins is as good as we can possibly make them. At the same time, we've got some very high-profile radio programmes, you know, Morning Ireland, News at One this week, which deliver fantastic journalism day after day. You know, it's ensuring they've got the resources and the people they need to do their job properly. Investigative journalism you asked about, I mean, that's very resource-hungry in terms of people and particularly in terms of money as well. So, you know, those are really important parts of the journalism to keep going with. But you're right, I mean, the world is changing quickly, and to have a strong presence online, on Twitter as well, and on, you know, on iPhones and iPads and so on, which is an increasingly important part of the market, those are all really important. So it's a little bit of a balancing act, especially when you're living in a world of slightly more diminished resources, to try and make sure you're doing all those things as well as you possibly can be without dropping the ball.
I know you're very active on Twitter yourself. Has there been a general embracing of social media in RT in the newsroom?
Well, I think that was, to be fair, that was well underway, actually. You know, I got a few messages myself when I joined RT on Twitter, but there are a lot of people on Twitter, and people use it very well. I mean, the RT News Twitter account's got over 125,000 followers, which is quite significant. You know, it is an important part of what we do, and it's an important part of what we do, connecting with new and younger audiences. You know, young audiences are not easy for anyone to connect with in a way, particularly in such a fragmented world, and even more difficult in the world of news and current affairs, where it isn't necessarily top priority for some younger people. But, you know, putting news content via Twitter or on the website or on iPads, or where those younger audiences tend to be consuming their news, as you rightly said, is an important part of, you know, the future of what we do.
Now, something else I know you've been tweeting about have been the dramas in the BBC. What's your take on what's happening there?
Well, I think they've managed to appoint a very good new head of news there, James Harding. You know, he's got a very good journalistic track record. Best of luck to him. I think it's not totally different from the kind of the trauma that RTE went through, in a way. You know, the BBC is totally paid for by licence fee, not just partially like we are. It absolutely relies on the trust and support of its audiences, and I think they felt very let down. And, you know, there was another element of that in the Savile story, in that there was a kind of whiff of a, and probably not true as far as I understand it, but, you know, a whiff of a cover-up, you know, and it was a BBC person. They were bad mistakes, and the BBC has paid a price in terms of personnel and in terms of levels of trust and so on. But there is another parallel with RTE. There are some extremely good people working in BBC News, and there are some extremely good people working in RTE News. And in the end, the burden for rebuilding trust falls on the shoulders of those people who are still left there and do a fantastic job day in, day out. You know, and of course, you make high-profile mistakes and you pay the price rightly. But day in, day out, when you're producing extraordinary coverage, if I look at some of the coverage the BBC's done in the last year of Syria, it's been fantastically brave, something that few other people have aspired to do. And you know, it's doing that kind of journalism, I'm sure, will re-establish them.
You say you don't believe there was any cover-up in the Savile case. You were there for part of that time. Was there any doubt at all about the propriety of what was going on? Any suspicions? Because it does seem to have been quite widespread, both the abuse and the knowledge of it.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I would say, certainly from my time there, the most you could say there was that there were kind of weird rumours about, and they weren't even about specifically about child abuse, about Jimmy Savile being a bit of a weird guy. That was as far as I, and I was there 23 years, that was as far as I heard it. I just think it's sad. It is sad that the victims didn't feel they could come forward while he was still alive. You know, I didn't work in light entertainment or whatever, so I wasn't that closely connected to it. I mean, certainly there was no more than kind of weak rumour. You can't, if you're a news person, you can't do much with weak rumour, really.